to the beat.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, joined by co-host Jeff.
What up, Mark? Are you feeling the shivers and the thrills from all the dragons we've seen this month?
I am feeling very dragony.
Lots of fire-breathing, scaly, yeah. Gold-hoarding dragons.
Yeah, especially after this week, super dragon. Dragon up. I can't wait to talk about what we watched this week. But before we get into what we watched this week, we got to plug some music. And on the podcast, we're plugging the pop artist Madeline with her song, I'm Only Here for the Beat. Be sure to hit the show notes so you get the links to all her social media. And give her a like, follow, and subscribe. She's doing big things on the pop scene. Jeff, it's been a while since we've had a pop artist as a musical guest. Favorite pop artist?
Favorite pop artist? Well, I guess you consider it pop, but one of my favorite groups right now is a band called Chromeo, and they do sort of disco funk, poppy, fun music. I'm actually going to go see them in concert in September.
Oh, I'm aware of the Chromeo.
Chromeo's awesome.
I haven't heard anything from them in a while, but...
Yeah, their new album just came out like about 2 months ago.
Okay, but we're not plugging Chromeo on the podcast.
But you asked the question. You can't act like I'm just talking about random bands.
Big shout out to Madeline for allowing us to use her music here on our podcast. Jeff.
Yes.
What do we watch this week?
Well, like I said, it's Dragon Month, and we've seen so many dragons last week, and we keep the dragon train rolling with possibly more dragons.
All the dragons. There were so many dragons in this film.
It was insane. From 2000, I don't know if people know what sarcasm or irony is, but they're getting lots of it. As we watched Red Dragon from 2002, it runs for 2 hours and 4 minutes. It stars Anthony Hopkins reprising his role of Hannibal Lecter, as well as Edward Norton, Ralph Fiennes, Emily Watson, and Harvey Keitel. And Mary Louise Parker is in this as well. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Anthony Held. Those are all the faces I recognized.
Yeah, so... Had you seen this before?
No. I have seen Silence of the Lambs. I have seen Hannibal. And I've seen Silence of the Hams, which is probably the best of the three.
Yeah, household favorite. Okay, so let me ask you this before we dive into this one. Is Hannibal Lecter a Rushmore villain?
Not based on this film.
No, that's not what I asked you.
A Rushmore villain, so like movie villains.
Yeah, a top movie villain of all time.
All right, well, you got to think about this. So I think you got to do... That's a good question.
I know. I only come up with great things.
I'm trying to think of who else would
kind of like this
on the theme it. This like month. This long pause. Oh, yeah, the theme. Hey, you know, theme wise, it might be our worst. Okay, I mean, and we've had some real stinkers, but the fact that we said dragon movies, and I think there's only like two movies in existence that aren't The Hobbit that are dragon films.
listen, this movie's got a dragon in it.
Not a literal dragon. It's just as figurative as last week. So I can't fault you and make fun of you and take you to task like I've been known to do in the past.
Yeah. All right. So the question I asked.
Is it the...
I'm going to give you the entire episode to think about it. All right. And then we'll revisit at the end of the episode, and you can tell me if Hannibal Lecter is one of the greatest movie villains of all time.
Well, you specifically said Rushmore.
Right, and the Rushmore is...
The top four.
A top four movie villain.
So if you say one of the greatest of all time, yes. If you're saying he's top four, I need a little more time to process.
Right, and I'm giving it to you. I'm giving it to you.
Which I appreciate that you notice that and are doing that for me, Mark.
Anyway. This movie is directed by Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at Ratner's filmography, he has 61 directorial credits. That's how you know somebody's probably not very good at directing when they have 61 movies.
Is that how you judge it?
I think so.
You think if they have a lot, they're not very good at directing?
I think if they have 61, they're probably not very
specifically
good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if he makes another picture, he might be in the...
No, I think anywhere north of 40.
So wait, he has 60 directorial credits? Now, that's not 60 movies.
That's not 60 movies. It's 60 music videos, TV series,
that's
documentaries.
Because if someone tops 53, which is Hitchcock...
and we've already established Hitchcock doesn't have a list of bangers. I mean, he's got a list.
Well,
the movies as a total,
you have to dig. Listen, you're talking to the expert here.
I know.
You have to dig through a lot of trash, especially if you're watching them in order. But I can rattle off some bangers from Hitchcock's catalog.
Sure. I mean, the man has 53. I would hope you'd be able to rattle off a couple.
Oh no, I can give you 10.
That's still like a terrible average.
I'm compared to who? Compared to Spielberg? Yeah. But I mean, Spielberg hits a lot more.
No, but I'm saying
if you
direct 53
also,
films.
Also, this is before people made movies. Like, listen, I've shit on some of his work before. But you have to keep in mind that Hitchcock he basically was there right at the beginning of filmmaking.
Right.
And so he didn't have a lot of people to learn from.
Sure. I get it. And
Brett Ratner has no excuse.
No, he has zero excuses. His Rush Hour 3, that's a Brett Ratner film.
And 2 and 1.
X-Men The Last Stand.
Oh, he did The Last Stand?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now.
Right. Rush Hour 2, Rush Hour, yep. And then that's really it other than music videos.
Well, I mean, Tower Heist, you know, like it's
Money
mostly.
Talks.
Money Talks is fun.
Yeah. The Family Man, After Sunset, that's it. He honestly, I don't know why IMDb does that. Oh, you directed a music video? Credit.
Yeah, it's one of those things I wish you could just
sift through. Yeah.
Trim it to fully full-length films.
Yeah. Anyways,
especially if you were to start a podcast where you went through things chronologically and you only wanted theatrical releases, would really come in handy.
You know, that person could probably write a strongly worded letter to the IMDb.
They should. I'm going to get on Eric about that. Have him do that. I don't want to do it.
So you hadn't seen it. It's been a long time since I've seen this. I have seen it. I forgot that it's a prequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I knew it was a prequel.
I just forgot. Like, it's not shot in a way. I mean, it is, but it's not. It's because you go back and watch Silence of the Lambs like I did after I watched this one.
Oh, you did? So, okay, that's good to know. Which one's better? Silence of the Lambs by what, a mile? Two?
No, it's not by a mile.
This isn't bad, but
this movie's not bad, right? Yes, correct.
There are some things I will get into to ding it on, but
it's not bad. I think the greatest sin this movie does is it puts Anthony Hopkins on the bench.
He is on the bench. Like, this is not a Hannibal Lecter film.
No, it's not. He keeps popping up, but it's for very short periods of time.
Yeah, and he's really kind of playing the greatest hits to me.
Right.
Like, yes. It's not like adding anything to the character. It's like just more of the character.
Right. And then that's the thing is that I'm like, you know, we're talking, you know, a potential top four villain of all time.
Potentially, yet to be determined.
Right. And he's really just being this side character in this film about a very less, a much less interesting serial killer, in my opinion. And so I just think that's probably the film's biggest sin, is that they have Hannibal Lecter in this film and they do nothing with him.
Yeah, it really honestly feels sort of like a shitty remake. Shitty is a strong word. It feels like a lesser remake of the original film, because, and you've seen it more recently than me, but
yeah,
from the original movie, it was Clarice talking to him about catching Buffalo Bill. And in this movie, it's Edward Norton talking to him about catching Ray Fiennes.
Yeah.
The Tooth Fairy, which is a horrible fucking serial killer name. Horrible.
It is. So Ray Fiennes Ray Fiennes is not bad here. I didn't think. I just think he didn't have a lot to really.
I think Ray Fiennes is good. I think he does a good job.
Yeah. Right. I agree. But the movie doesn't really give him a lot to work with. Like the scene where Ray Fiennes and Emily Watson's character, you know, they're kind of spending this intimate night together.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very interesting. I wanted to see more of that. Like when Ralph Fiennes was on screen, I'm like, okay, let's go. I like this. I like seeing this side of this character. Is because we already know he's the serial killer. There's no question, right? The film doesn't like breadcrumb it along and make you realize that he's this guy. He is this guy. And then they show you a glimpse of his character in this kind of one moment. And then you're supposed to maybe feel something for his character. And I just feel like it wasn't enough for me, because Ralph Fiennes is a tremendous actor.
Yeah, and he's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt kind of like, you know, cheated almost. It's because Ed Norton's really good. Harvey Keitel, really good. Film's littered with great actors. And I just feel like none of them.
I really liked Philip Seymour Hoffman's role, because it wasn't like he's this sleazy reporter guy. And he
this is Philip Seymour Hoffman before.
On,
yeah, it's this is him. This is Along Came Polly, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well,
before
didn't you and I watch a movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman when he was really young?
Didn't we?
Was that you and I? I'm trying to remember. It was they were in school.
Yes, but I don't remember what movie.
I want to say you and I. Well, I'll see if I can find it. But I liked Philip Seymour Hoffman is so good at this character of just being a slime ball, and then when he absolutely gets his shit pushed in, it's simultaneously like, that's what you get, but also like, damn, he doesn't really deserve this.
Right.
So I really loved his role.
Yeah. The whole story of how Hannibal, I guess, first ended up in prison and like his original nemesis, so to speak, in mm-hmm. Edward Norton. I mean, that's interesting. It's because the precedent of the character has already been set via Silence of the Lambs, and so the addition of him as kind of a bit of a foil in this film is interesting. I did enjoy that. I liked him kind of stringing Edward Norton along, but also wanting to really help.
I don't know that he wants the help. I think he just likes to help. He likes
being needed. Okay. That's a better
he doesn't
word.
Give a shit if this guy gets away with it or not.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So for me, the best Hannibal stuff is the opening scene. Because I didn't see it coming. I thought we were gonna have a a longer film of their relationship uncovering, like, I think a better movie even would be the whole story leading up to this opening scene where we find out that Edward Norton has been working with Hannibal Lecter to find this killer, and they're really investigating Hannibal Lecter, right?
Right, right.
And I thought that would be so much more interesting of a film. But what we get is the tail end of that where he stabs Edward Norton, which I had it in my brain that Edward Norton didn't make it through this movie. And so it was kind of weird to start with this.
He's pretty invincible in this movie.
He is. Have you seen the latest Scream movies?
Yes.
Because Scream at some point went from, oh, we cut you on the arm, but that you'll still live through that, to being just fully eviscerated, right, and you still live. Like, just people are living through crazy shit in these movies. And, but anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but he gets shot and
he gets shot like three times. He gets stabbed like three times.
I really think he probably should have bit the dust. And the thing about this movie is, and the frustrating thing for me was actually on behalf of Mary Louise Parker's character, who is the spouse of Edward Norton's character, Will Graham. And she's like, no, don't get back into this looking for serial killer shit. It almost killed you before. Don't do it. Don't do it. And he does it, and it goes horribly wrong, just as she predicted. Right. And I just was like, every time something bad happened to him, like when Hannibal Lecter found, like, I think he was off of Hannibal Lecter's radar, you know, and here he comes, show him back up again. And now Hannibal Lecter wants to fuck with this guy. It's interesting, you know, that she was right the whole time. And I'm just like, you fucked up, bro. She was right. You should have just stayed home. Shit ain't worth it.
Well, and I thought the Ralph Fiennes character of the serial killer is like, I enjoyed the, it wasn't even really the chase, but I enjoyed the reveal of how he kills and why they think he kills people the way he does. And I just thought there was a lot of backstory to him, the killer, that I'm like, okay,
yeah, this is cool. Was actually, honestly, I think he was the best character in the movie.
Yeah.
Because he had depth. There was something sympathetic about him. And a lot of that comes through his relationship with Emily Watson. And there's a part of you that's watching the movie that's just rooting for him to give up this murderer's life and just go off with the girl. Right. And be happy. And, you know, me watching the movie, I know this is set in the world of, you know, Silence of the Lambs. That's just not going to happen. Nothing good is going to happen to anyone. But I'm still rooting for him to give it up, you know, and he didn't. But I felt like there was something, unlike Hannibal Lecter, you never feel sympathetic for Hannibal Lecter because he's a right. genius and he's smart. And he's not someone that you could really even say is mentally ill.
No, I would say twisted. He's actually not mentally ill. He's just, right. like you but said, I think, twisted.
I think Ralph Fiennes' character is, right?
Yes, like 100%. He's
got something else going on in his brain that is not neurotypical. So, and I think that makes him more sympathetic. And I think he's more sympathetic than Buffalo Bob was. But I think Buffalo Bob was more of a character. Like, Buffalo yeah. Bob was crazy.
Yeah, right. But, and the thing about Ralph Fiennes and his portrayal of the character is that he makes that character, he makes the audience kind of question like how they want to feel about him at certain times. And, you know, to me, that's good. One, that's good writing, and two, that's good acting. And so, like, when the scene with Emily Watson and who is very good in this, too, by the
way. She's great. She really is.
you know, she plays a blind woman, and you know, she falls for Ralph Fiennes, the, I guess, not, I don't even know, like, what is she, it's not looks, but it's just kind of his
mysterious. He's a quiet,
yeah,
mysterious guy, and some people like that.
Yeah, know? And like, you know, the entire time I'm like, no, lady, run, trip over some shit and run.
And I think too, like, part of the appeal for her is that I wonder if she feels like men, like there's this other male character that's always hitting on her, but men maybe think that they're kind of throwing her a bone. No, yeah. Double entendre intended, that because she's this blind woman that, you know, maybe they've got a better chance. And Ralph Fiennes, when they meet, isn't really interested in her, you know? And I think that's what appeals to her. Plus, he's kind of dark and...
Well, he's self-conscious.
Yeah.
And you know, about his scars on his face and stuff.
Yeah.
I just, so, you know, it's... It's almost the film's saving grace to me is that in the middle of this, like, kind of cat and mouse game that Ed Norton is playing with Ralph Fiennes' character, even though Ralph Fiennes' character doesn't know it. I mean, he knows Ed Norton exists. He's just not concerned. Is that we get this glimpse into the tooth fairy killer and who that person is, and, you know, a little bit about them, and then their intimacy, their, you know, how they feel about another person who they end up putting in a predicament situation where, you know, the voices in the head say, kill him, and you're like, no, I don't want to kill her, and
yeah.
then you see the mental health aspect come out, and... I just thought I really liked those scenes, and I wish we had gotten more of those scenes. And it's because we're left to assume that Ed Norton knows what he's doing, right? He doesn't really get to show too much of, like, yeah, I'm this badass, you know, profiler, except that he took down Hannibal Lecter. But he only took down Hannibal Lecter because he faked his death and stabbed him at the last minute. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
It's just that this movie makes me, like, go back and forth of, did I actually like this, or did I only like certain parts of this?
I liked most of it. I would say that generally speaking, I liked most of it. And I just kind of, my issues with the movie really come down to the existence of Silence of the Lambs just being a better version of this movie.
Yeah.
I think that Jodie Foster does a better job in that movie than Ed Norton does in this. I like Ed Norton. Generally speaking, I think he's a great actor. I just don't care as much. There's something about Jodie Foster and Clarice that's a lot more intriguing to me, that I can't really put a finger on. I think it's like her inwardness and the way it plays off of, you know, Hannibal Lecter's extroverted sort of over the top way of doing things. I think she reins that in. And I just like Jodie Foster in general. I think she's excellent. My problems again are the existence of that. And one of the worst parts of this movie, what would you say before I say, and I'll see if you agree, what was the worst part of this movie? Just scene, like, think of a scene. I'm not even saying like an existential, like, oh, the worst part was the directing or whatever. So, like, okay. a scene. There's a scene I think of specifically that I just cringed at.
I hated the scene where they find out that Tooth Fairy is still alive, and then the helicopter spotlight over the house in the Florida Keys goes over, and Mary Louise Parker wakes up out of a dead sleep. I don't know. It was just I didn't really like that scene. But.
Fair enough. That I would generally say didn't bother me, but I did see that twist coming, that the Tooth Fairy was still alive. I thought it was well done though, but But the part
Well, the fact that it happened off scene, off camera clued you in.
Yeah. Right. But there's that body there that the blind girl touches. So there was another body in the house. Like, it was all planned, which that part throws me. I'm like, so this guy planned on pretending to kill himself in front of her? I don't know. Like, it didn't make sense. Like, that motivation was weird to me. Why trick her? Why not just have her not come over? You know?
Right, right, right.
But the part that gets me is at the end of the movie, the very last scene they go, hey, Hannibal, there's someone here to see you, an FBI agent. She wants to talk to you. And we're all going like, oh, shit, it's Clarice. And then they walk away and he goes, hold on. What's her name? And I do British because I can't do an Anthony Hopkins accent or impression. And you just roll your eyes all the way back into your head. Yes, we know this is a precursor to Silence of the Lambs. Are we supposed to be excited that this movie isn't Silence of the Lambs?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so stupid. It's different. Like, it made me think of the end of The Dark Knight. Which is Batman Begins, where they turn the card over and it's the Joker.
Right.
And the whole thing about that is that movie's yet to come. That's why that's exciting. Right. That movie is telling you we're doing the Joker next.
Yeah.
And so that gets you as a fan really excited to see the Joker. They do the same thing at the end of this movie for a movie that's been out for several decades. And it just is like, what am I like? Oh, hell yeah. Now I got to go watch this movie that I've already seen. It just was stupid to me. It didn't need it. And it was the actions of a less skilled screenwriter or director. Whoever decided to put that in thought they were given the theater. Oh my God, Clarice moment. But nobody cared. Because we know Clarice comes next. It's not a surprise.
Yeah. I think what, like, if you're going to make that decision, and this is 2002, so the technology probably doesn't exist yet. But if we got Julianne Moore popping up as a de-aged Julianne Moore,
do we really want that? Why wouldn't we just call Jodie Foster?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Julianne Moore is the shitty. Listen, no, we all know how I feel about Julianne Moore.
I meant Jodie Foster.
She's the shitty Clarice.
I meant Jodie Foster. I know you hate Julianne Moore.
I don't hate her personally. Don't like her acting. I always have to reiterate that. It's nothing personal. I just don't enjoy watching her on screen. And to replace Jodie Foster was a travesty.
I wish it was personal. I wish she had this vendetta against her. Like, she wronged you in some way.
I do against Aronofsky. Fucking God, not really. His movies just suck. But I
think, like, if we got Jodie Foster at the end of this movie,
that'd have been different.
Right.
Because Hannibal had already come out at this point, and we knew, like, that it at least have been like, oh, Jodie Foster, yay, because she had relinquished the role. I think they didn't want to pay her, maybe. It's just probably the case because she's a woman, but they didn't. I mean, that's how
Brent
it goes.
Ratner.
Like, if it was, no, if not talking about Red Dragon, but talking about Hannibal, right? Like, they just thought, hey, all we really need to do is get Anthony Hopkins back. And Anthony Hopkins probably named his price, right? But Jodie Foster doesn't get that same opportunity. So,
well, you know, Brett Ratner was.
Brett Ratner didn't direct Hannibal. We're not even. Listen, I don't like Brett Ratner.
I'm talking about Red Dragon, the end of Red Dragon.
Oh,
he didn't want to use Jodie Foster because he'd probably get accused of sexual misconduct. I don't know.
He might. He's got a history of it, I think.
Yeah, he does.
Allegedly. I don't actually know if that's true, but I think he does.
He was accused.
Anyway.
He was alleged for Rush Hour stuff. But,
try that shit on Jackie Chan. Kick his ass across the room.
And we're bringing it back full circle to Bruce Lee. All right. I mean, there's nothing left to say about this movie.
Any kills or anything memorable? The part where Philip Seymour Hoffman gets captured.
I love him.
Yellow stained tidy whities.
I love him rolling down the street on fire. I mean, that was
cool. Oh, that was great. I didn't see that coming. That's a great way to deliver a villain. Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't too many.
No, it was closer to like a Seven style movie where it was less about the kills and more about the overall tension. And,
right.
But I did like this procedural style movie of them trying to find the killer. Honestly, if you take Hannibal out of it, it's a fine thriller movie. And it's actually the same movie, to be honest, because I think, like you said, they didn't have enough Hannibal. And the Hannibal that they did have just felt like it was a reminder that you didn't do enough Hannibal. And again, I really think that Anthony Hopkins just overdoes it in this one. Like, it's way too much. And maybe I'm sick of him, you know, but I just feel like it's a heightened version of Hannibal Lecter.
Get the fuck out of here, Anthony Hopkins. Nobody calls you.
I mean, I don't mean it that way, but
I'm tired of you.
I don't think that it just feels over the top. God, Anthony Hopkins
again?
There's no subtlety to his performance. That's the way I would put it. Where there is subtlety to Vin Rames' performance.
Did you ever see the series Hannibal? It was on NBC.
No, I have no interest.
It was really good. I saw the first couple of seasons where what's his face plays Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen, and Hugh Dancy plays the FBI profiler. But I thought it was really good. So there's a lot of things that are around or set in the Silence of the Lambs universe, and which was honestly probably by accident. Like, they accidentally created this Anthony Hopkins Hannibal universe, and they ended up profiting a lot from it. But I just think that, like, this movie, like you said, would have been fine as its own cat and mouse serial killer movie without Hannibal Lecter. We got Hannibal Lecter, but we didn't get enough of him. So it's like, oh, yeah, why is he even here?
To draw people into the theater.
Sure.
And like I said, how much better of a movie would have this been if we as the audience were watching Edward Norton and Hannibal Lecter investigate the killings of Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah, right.
That's a better movie. Make that. Don't make this.
But that's essentially what the Hannibal TV series was.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, okay. It's Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen and investigating crimes that Mads Mikkelsen is doing.
That sounds way better.
No, it is. It's a really good it's a really good series, and I think it's on. You might be able to find it on Prime. But for a film here, and we haven't even touched on the dragon aspect of this.
Oh, the dragon comes out of nowhere. It's big and scaly. It's got gigantic wings, and it's like, wah-ha! And it flies in and it eats Mary Louise Parker whole. It's the best movie I've ever seen.
The fucking dragon sound you made.
I don't know. The dragon is a demon, basically, that's in a picture that Ray Fiennes
is controlling. Ray Fiennes, that's it.
Yeah, and he's got that awesome tattoo on his back. Oh, we didn't even talk about the most important thing.
Yeah, let's go.
We have to whip it out, baby. It's the dong counter. Collecting dust in the corner. It comes out of nowhere. We got slapped in the face as Ray Fiennes runs up the stairs completely nude, and you just see,
I mean, just slap him between, yeah, plack, slap him between plack, the legs.
Plack, 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 plack. That's the real dragon in this movie. We feasted our eyes upon the dragon, and the dong and Ray, counter ticked
and
up.
And listen,
one.
Ray Fiennes is no small man.
He's hanging in there with the big dogs, if you know what I mean.
He is not a small man. He is a large person.
Do you ever wonder if they use like Austin Powers' Swedish made penis enlarger before they go on camera? Because like, if you know,
just give it a swift pump.
Well, a film I've seen many times is Saving Sarah Marshall, and Jason Segel whips his dick out so many times in that movie, and he is not working with a small unit, right? So I'm wondering.
But he's also a large man.
Okay. Does he do any preparations? I would think so. I would think you would. You don't want to be at attention, certainly. No,
right.
But you kind of want to be on your way down, maybe. Okay. And I just wonder if there's like a protocol that actors have.
I think like in a scene like here in this movie, the act of running upstairs naked probably gives you a little adrenaline. Maybe.
But if it's cold in there, you got to think it's cold in there.
I mean, you do, but
you never see an actor filming nude scenes getting out of the pool, at least the male one.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see the truly a brave actor film a scene walking out of the pool and just
the courage that
just
this would
take. Just a little mushroom and just being like, yep, this is what I'm rolling with. We can have dreams, can't we?
The bravest of brave, getting out of the pool naked.
Confident man there. He didn't have to use a pump. I'm not saying Ralph Fiennes did. I'm not saying Jason Segel did.
But they had
fire hoses.
Which one played Voldemort?
Ralph Fiennes.
It was Ralph Fiennes. Okay. Because Ralph Fiennes has brothers that are also actors.
Yeah, which one of them was in the movie Luther?
Yeah,
I can't remember
Joseph,
his name.
Was it Joseph?
Yeah,
Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good movie. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, and I think Joseph Fiennes also is in that Enemy at the Gates movie.
Yeah,
have you ever seen that about the Russian sniper?
Oh no!
Oh, that's a good one.
I don't do war movies really.
I know. Anyways,
whip it out, Joseph. We got to compare.
Where do you draw the line at blood, you know?
They don't have to be in the same room. But on a different film, we could take screenshots.
Hey, we can compare this
on the
YouTube.
Adjust for scale.
We can't compare it on the YouTube, but
we can
blur
it
out. I don't know.
No, I wouldn't bother. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So, you ready for this Mount Rushmore?
Yes. Okay. So the question was, is Hannibal Lecter a top four villain of all time? Movie villain of all time.
This is, of course, up for debate.
Sure.
And I'm going to have a homer pick of Norman Bates. Okay. He's on my four.
Okay.
And then I'm going to have a not so homer pick of one that I think even you would agree with, of Darth Vader.
Yes, for sure.
He's on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, he is.
I'm then going to pick Jason Voorhees. I get it. That's fine. I don't care. Jason Voorhees. And let's go with I want to say
this is great podcasting.
I'm going to say Jack Torrance from The Shining.
What the fuck?
I don't know. Okay. How about no, I don't know. Shit. It could be Hannibal. I just don't care. Yeah, it's a great performance, but it is over the top. And like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't do that much for me. How about Thanos? Fucking Thanos.
Sure. No, like, that's an interesting selection because...
I'm scrolling through this top 30 list that's on Collider because I couldn't think of it. And their number one... So their top four is Darth Vader, which I'm like, hell yeah. I think everyone agrees Darth Vader, right?
Yes.
And then the Joker, but they specifically have... I guess maybe they're including all of them in it, which if you're including the Joker as a character, then yes, he's number two.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Then they have Hannibal third and then Norman Bates fourth.
Okay.
I just don't know that Hannibal hangs with those three.
I mean, I don't know. How does he hang with Norman Bates? Like, I mean, Norman Bates has got one film, right?
No. He's got four films. He's got a remake, and he's got a TV show, just like Hannibal. They're like almost on the same level as far as like cultural impressions. Yeah, but
all right, who gives the better performance? Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, that's not even close. Anthony Hopkins.
Right. So then that would lead me to...
Not Hopkins. Sorry.
Oh.
I misspoke because they're both Anthony's. Anthony Perkins does. It's not even close. Because, sure, Hannibal Lecter is an iconic performance. I don't think it's as grounded or true to life. It's this guy's hamming it up for the camera. And we're eating it up as viewers. And again, I am biased. I am undeniably biased. Psycho is my favorite movie ever made. So, in my opinion, Anthony Perkins shits all over Hannibal Lecter.
You want to hear my four?
I really do.
Okay. Well, it's so Vader and Joker are two of them. I think Hannibal Lecter is up there, even though, like you said, he's probably close to the debatable ones. But I think the fourth, and this you'll like this, and I think it'll come at you from left field. I think it's the Ghostface Killer. The character.
I love Ghostface now.
Right. Now, right.
The only reason I wouldn't put Ghostface up there is because I'd have a hard time putting Ghostface above Voorhees and above Myers.
Yeah, but I just think
from a slasher perspective,
the Scream films are more culturally relevant. Even though Mike Myers is somewhere close there. I just don't think the Mike Myers films in total are as good as the Scream films. Yeah, Jason is fine, but again, when was the last good Jason movie?
His last one, which was a long time ago. But
but I just think like
Freddy versus Jason was good. He has more bangers than shitty ones. Freddy versus Jason's good.
Is that the one where
Gollum,
in space?
Honorable mention would be like Gollum. The aforementioned Voldemort makes a lot of sense.
Oh, Voldemort does make a lot of sense.
Again, I'm scrolling through the Collider list to see which ones are. They say the Terminator, but I have trouble with that because the Terminator is a good guy in the second movie.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger, of course, would need to be on that list. The shark from Jaws? No. I love Jaws, but no. Scar is on this list.
Nah.
Yeah.
As a one-off, so. I mean, yeah, fine. But no, I do think the character Hannibal Lecter, because of the universe, cinematic universe that was created around him, around the character, that, I mean, we're going to get a remake.
I don't want another one.
No, but you're going to get a remake of Silence of the Lambs.
I don't want that either. Like, I didn't want a remake of Psycho, and they gave it to us. It was awful. Like, I don't know. Well, and I guess I don't care, honestly, because I don't have that much of an attachment to Silence of the Lambs. I think it's a good movie, but I do think... I personally think that Anthony Hopkins' portrayal is a bit overrated. He's charismatic. That's fine. He's charismatic, but I think it's a lot, right? He's putting on a lot. And that's how I feel about it. Speaking of which, someone putting on a lot, overacting, if you will. I figured out the movie I was talking about where Philip Seymour Hoffman was in school.
Yeah.
And I don't think you and I watched it together, actually. It was Scent of a Woman.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah. He's in school in that, but Al Pacino overacts his ass off in that movie. You know, and that's just how I feel.
Most of Al Pacino's films are him overacting.
Some of them better than others. I like Al Pacino too. Like I get, there are some movies. I like Jim Carrey, and that motherfucker overacts, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love his movies, so I get it. There's a place for it. But when comparing these villains, I have a hard time putting Hannibal Lecter in the same place as I would a Norman Bates.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair.
Personally.
I just thought it was an interesting question, and I wanted to see where you lined up on it. So at the end of this, do you recommend Red Dragon?
No. Just go watch Silence of the Lambs. It's better. It tells you the same story. Better acting. The only reason I would say watch this is because Ralph Fiennes is really good.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat. Even though I enjoyed the film, it, like you said, Silence of the Lambs is a better version of this, which is weird because like you would think they'd try to distinguish between the two films. But
no, they made the same shit.
Right. But, you know, it is worth watching, and it's not long. Like it's a brisk 2 hours. So
I would say, I'll say this, and again, our recommendations aren't just like, is it good or bad? It's, is it really good? Like,
right.
do we think you need to take time to watch this?
Is it hanging on the wall of the draft house?
However,
no.
If it's on and you've got 2 hours, you will be entertained.
Sure.
And I found it to be a really entertaining movie.
Yeah. So what are we watching next week?
We are watching a movie with a real dragon in it.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Hold on to your butts. Actual dragon with wings and flying and fantasy and stuff like that.
Hell yes.
We're watching Dragonheart from 1996, directed by Rob Cohen, who I believe directed Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
The Dragon of Bruce Lee story. Which we already watched this month. And so he's back again. I'm double dipping with Dennis Quaid, Sean Connery, as well as Jason Isaacs. And I think, is Brian Thompson the guy that played Buffalo Bill? No. He played Buffalo Bob. I think he was in Joe Dirt. He's in this movie. Let me check. But I think he
David
was in Joe
Poulos,
Dirt.
And Pete Postlethwaite.
Well, Brian Thompson. I could be wrong. I thought this was the guy. There's a guy in Joe Dirt who plays a Buffalo Bob style character. And I wanted to say it was the same actor, but I could be wrong. I'm going to find out, though.
It's been so long since I've seen this movie.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it. Okay.
This is crazy. It was a movie from the 90s.
Yeah, and it's got animatronics in it. So,
well, I think it's mostly CG, though, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
I thought so.
It could be. I mean, it's late enough in the 90s that it would make sense, but I bet you it's a blend. Anyways, I'm excited to watch it. Looks like we're going to be spending more money this weekend.
I was right. Brian Thompson, who's in this movie that we're about to watch, Dragon, whatever the hell, he played a Buffalo Bob style character, or excuse me. So it was Buffalo Bill was in the original Silence of the Lambs. He plays Buffalo Bob in the movie Joe Dirt. So there's your degrees of separation and shit.
You know, it's going to be a good time. I can't wait.
I think so.
Anyways, before we get out of here, we got to plug the music again. And this month, we're giving thanks to the pop artist Madeline for allowing us to use her song, I'm Only Here for the Beat. Wait till you hear this one, Jeff. Even though it's week two and you should have already heard it.
I watch the YouTube cuts now.
Oh, okay.
From us. So I don't listen on the audio feed.
Right.
So I don't get to hear the music as much. I need to stop doing that. But I like seeing our beautiful faces.
That's true. Big shout out to Madeline for allowing us to use her music here on our podcast. Hit the show notes. So you don't miss all of the links to her social media accounts. Give her a like, follow, subscribe. And if you want to follow the podcast on all your favorite social media platforms, you can find us at Movie Draft House. We're here. We're on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, right here on YouTube. So don't forget to hit the subscribe button when it pops up, so you don't miss any future content right here on our podcast. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter and tell him, hey man, I'm glad you blew off the dung counter. Because guess who's Dong we get to see in Dragonheart?
Blew off?
Yep. I did the it on Dong purpose.
You wrote that down a week ago.
You can find them at and I'm not Podcast mad. By Jeff.
You can find me at Podcast by Jeff. And if you want to get in touch with Mark and do something with blowing him off, anyway, shit, that was bad. But you can find him on Twitter at I Heard You Liked.
Jeff, throw out the plugs to your other thing. And
I already talked about chronologically. We're just kicked off here at the beginning of April, season 4. We're going through the movies of Stephen King, specifically from the 70s and 80s. That season just started, so it's a really good time to jump in if you've not listened to it before. And that's all my plugs. I've only got 2 podcasts.
Oh, thank God. Seriously. I don't know. any last words?
Nope, none at all. Remember, dragons. The dragons are the friends we made along the way.
Here for the beat.